Hello, it is Bootstrapped Web. We're back. Jordan, how's it going, buddy?
Hey, Brian, what's happening?
How you feeling?
I'm doing okay. I'm a little hungover from the Carthook holiday party last night, which we held at our office. I'll post some pics on Twitter, actually. It came out fantastic. It was like transformed the whole space and then had people with their significant others. It was one of those nights you get all the feels, man. Kind of see the community that has popped up around it. A bunch of nice people, smart, hardworking people that have decided to work on one thing together. It's pretty cool.
That's really cool, man. It makes me like just really miss working in an office with people. My one real job before I went freelance over 10 years ago was at this very small web design agency in New York. It was like, when I was there, it was only like 12, 15 people, something like that. And we did things like that all the time, just like parties in the office, parties out at restaurants in New York. And like, it's just a lot of fun.
Yeah, that size is perfect because, you know, 100 person company becomes less personal. And 3 or 4 people is basically just a group of friends. And then like you get to the 10, it kind of gets these layers into it. And yeah, it's fun. Yep.
It's kind of funny because just the other day I was thinking about like just that I need to get myself out of my house more. Because I'm like,
I can see that,
you know, like I'm literally here alone in my sweatpants every single day, just working. I talk to folks like you and other friends online all the time. So I have that interaction, but I do feel a little bit like I need to talk to people face to face in the real world more and hang out with friends. And like a lot of my friends around here, like, you know, they've got families and jobs and a lot of them don't live so close. So it's like, I was looking at going to a co-working space over in New Haven, which is like 15-minute drive from my house. Not bad, but my wife and I, we really just share the one car because she's at home with the kids. I work at home. We only have one. So, you know, logistically, it makes it tough. But it has me thinking, like, I feel like I need to not only have the interaction. We didn't even plan on talking about this. But not only have like the interaction, just like getting out of the house, but like, I need to kind of meet more people locally, like in who are software developers or startup people or whatever. And I mean, I know that New Haven has a bunch of that kind of stuff going on. It would be good to, you know, who knows? Maybe I could actually work with somebody locally in person for once, you know?
Yeah. I'm a big believer in the physical space also makes a difference. Like right now I'm at my house, you know, we worked from home yesterday while we set the office up for the party and working from home today. I don't get anything done. I'm so bad at it. I'm like rusty at it at this point. So
I go out to Starbucks a lot. I go like maybe 3 days a week just to get out. And I like Starbucks. It's actually like really good Wi-Fi, believe it or not. And it's free to go. And, you know, it's pretty good. So
yeah, $5 coffee and you're good to go.
Yeah, exactly. It's literally where like all my cash goes is paying for Starbucks. So
now what were we talking about? Oh, we were talking about, I was flexing on my Peloton.
Yeah. So you just got a Peloton. I kind of freaked myself out a little bit. I paid for a gym membership last week. I signed up for the upcoming year. I like immediately regretted it. I just hate commitments of any kind. It's not even that much money. You know, it's like, it's not a meaningful amount of money. It's just the fact that like, I cannot cancel it until 12 months from now. And that pisses me off. I went in there at a time when it was not very busy. I was like, oh, this is great. I could do my thing. And then I go into work out like the next day. And this was like 4 in the afternoon. It's completely packed. And I'm just trying to basically learn what my routine is going to be and all that kind of stuff. And like, I can't use the machines and the bench and things that I was going to use, you know? So it was completely unproductive. You got to wait around. And like, it was just like, what am I here for?
You have good flexibility in your timing. Maybe you can really just ask them. One of the quietest times.
I mean, I went a couple of times and like 3 times in a row and I have access to all the different locations. So I tested out these different gym locations and this is like a game of chess really in terms of like managing the daily routine schedule of like there are all these constraints. Like number one, I want to do my best work in the morning. So I don't want to go to the gym like in the first thing in the morning. And I liked the idea of going around 4 o'clock to give me that break between like finishing the day and then before dinner and like kind of decompress over at the gym. That's way too crowded. So I can't do that. Middle of the day, that's what I've settled on today. So I just got back today and I'm going to kind of rearrange the schedule so that I'm going like lunchtime, you know, I'll have a quick lunch and then go to the gym and then But like my wife and I need to like coordinate the car and picking up the kids from school and all that. So it's like, it's just tricky, you know. I think that lunchtime or, you know, early afternoon, middle of the week is a little bit more open. Because I started thinking about like, screw it. I'm paying for the year. I'll just never go and I'm going to buy the home equipment so that I can just at least do the thing. And like, and then I'll cancel it a year from now. And I was just like, I don't know, getting all insane about it. But
No, don't. It is not an easy thing to figure out where to squeeze it in, but it is worth it. And I was having a lot of trouble. I loved Orange Theory. And I went regularly for 18 months. And then over the summer, right when we went to Michigan for those 2 weeks and then bought a house, we closed while we were in Michigan. So then came back and moved like a week later. And that just derailed our regular routine. And I have not get back into it because we used to go, my wife and I rotate for a 5 a.m. class. I was going like, you know, once every 2 weeks, once every 3 weeks. And that's kind of a waste of money. It's $100 a month. So then we had a conversation about Peloton in the office, and I'll tie it back to business here. It has a status. It has this thing that makes you desire it, right? Everyone's talking about it. It's all fancy and whatever else. So I was interested in it. So I go to look, and I'm looking at a really well-done site. And on the product page, it has a little button that says pre-qualify now. I'm like, pre-qualify? What does that mean? So I click on it, and it's Affirm. You know Affirm? So Affirm is a company started by Max Levchin, you know, of PayPal fame. It's a finance without interest. So you can buy expensive things and then pay it over time without paying any interest. And so the UX was so good. So I hit pre-qualify and then it just asked me a few questions, one at a time, right? Name, social security number, date of birth, address, like annual income. Enter. And then I'm immediately presented with a screen like you have been approved for $7,000 of credit at Peloton e-commerce. And then it shows me screen. It's $62 a month. I'm like, OK, they just overcame my single biggest barrier to purchasing it. And I didn't even add it to my cart yet. I'm at the product page and they've removed the single big, you know, as I'm on the site, I'm thinking to myself, I shouldn't do this. I shouldn't be doing this. This isn't smart to do. This isn't responsible to do. And then they just took that all away. And then I was like, okay, so it's literally cheaper if I get this machine that I really want, if I just quit the gym that I'm not going to. And that's it. I was done. They sold me on a $2,000 purchase with like this persuasion, like soft entry into the actual purchase. Right, it's not going on your credit card. It's like this guilt. It was very well done. They got me.
Guitar Center has been doing that for years, where it's like, you know, oh man, I want to get that $2,000 guitar. I really want to. And they're like, well, you could do it with just, you know, 12 months and no interest payments. Like that, they plaster that all over their advertisements. You know.
Yeah. Yeah. It's smart.
Yeah.
Yeah. So I quickly put Affirm on our integration roadmap. It was a fantastic experience, you know, for an online store, an online purchase. All right. Now that we have fulfilled Adam Wathan's tweet of talking about anything other than the actual podcast substance, maybe we should get into the podcast substance. What do you think?
Yeah, good idea.
Hi, Adam.
How's it going, Adam? The thing that I've sort of run up against in the last week or two is that, like, I have launched a whole bunch of things in the last like 2 months that I haven't even really announced, or maybe I tweeted once or twice, but it's between like Thanksgiving happening. And then I had a week of Black Friday where I was sending things to the list about productize, you know, I wanted to hold off. So I'm sort of like playing catch up on this. And I sent a newsletter out to my list today, tomorrow, or it's going to be going out tomorrow. So one thing that I finally released, I did this actually back in like October into November, was that making of a explainer video series. So I talked about like when I launched the explainer video for Process Kit, I also recorded like a bunch of footage of me, like this is how I'm making this, like in real time. It turned into like a 6-part video series. So I put that up on YouTube. That's out now on my YouTube channel. The week leading up to Thanksgiving, I also worked a bunch on Sunrise KPI. I gave myself about 4 or 5 days there because I had finished a big feature on Process Kit. I didn't want to start the next big feature before Thanksgiving. So I was like, I've got a little bit of time here. Let me get to like a whole list of features that I've been meaning to build on Sunrise, especially since I'm using Sunrise more now to track my numbers in Process Kit and track my numbers from audience ops and things. So I launched a whole bunch of things, like now the Stripe integration can do more, like you can track your subscription metrics. You can pull in data from a JSON API, and I'm using that myself to pull in data from Process Kit. You can track like month to date numbers compared to the previous month and stuff like that, and like a whole bunch of other things. I mean, that's still a very cheap product, like $15 a month. And I plan to make, oh, and the other big one is you can have multiple reports. So people like to use these for sending reports to clients, or if you have like multiple business lines, like I do, like I have an audience ops report and a Process Kit report. And so you could separate those out and customize them and stuff like that. I had planned on like putting those into like a higher pricing tier at some point, but I'm sort of just done working on that for now. So for now, it's like if you're in there now, you'll get grandfathered in whenever the prices change. But basically, that's that.
Yeah, and I've seen you do a lot on Process Kit also.
Well, let me come back to Process Kit because I have a bunch of updates there. The one other update that I wanted to mention real quick is actually Audience Ops. So, and, you know, keep in mind, I'm saying all these things today, but it's not like I worked on all these things in the same week. Like all these things that I'm talking about happened over the past like 2 months. But basically last week, and then I'm going to work on a little bit more next week, is in Audience Ops, I finally got around to doing a few updates that I've been meaning to do for a long time. Number one is we now have a dedicated case studies package for customers. So we've actually been doing customer case study content for clients for years now. We just kind of include it in their normal blogging package. But now we have a dedicated package that anyone can buy. And it's actually not a subscription. It's a one-time batch of case studies that you can purchase. And it includes like customer interviews recorded, and we turn those into video interviews and then video testimonials and then a blog article written about the customer. And it's really good. And we're actually about to launch our own batch of new case studies about audience ops that Sarah on my team has been producing over the past like 6 months or so. And they've come out really, really great. Like just, and these are not just testimonials. These are like 30-minute interviews with some of our best longtime clients to hear their story. I mean, it's going out on our audience ops podcast. We're turning them into videos for the YouTube channel. There's write-ups, and then we have like some pull quotes that we're using as testimonials. So I'm just really happy with that, and I'm excited to actually finally promote the fact that we actually do case studies for customers, even though we've been doing them. And then sort of along with that is Sarah from my team is going to be taking over sales for Audience Ops starting in January, which I'm really excited about. I'm very optimistic. I think she's great. She's been on the team for over 2-3 years now, I think. So she's been working as a manager. So she knows our clients really well. She knows our processes. And I think she'd be really great to take over the consultations that I've been doing. You know, it's somebody who can give it a lot more attention and energy than I've been giving it, frankly. So I've been talking to her about what this role entails. It's not just doing the sales calls and closing new accounts. It'll be a little bit of like driving new leads, a little bit of working on retention and checking back in with existing customers and lengthening their lifetime as customers and adding value over time and sort of a combination of all that. And I'm really excited about that. So, yeah.
Are you looking for a replacement for her current position, or is it in addition to? It sounds like a lot of responsibilities.
Yeah. I mean, we've talked about it being in addition to. So she has been one of our account managers, and she does a little bit of podcasting for us. So this will be in addition to that. But if she wants to reduce some of the management workload, we're also hiring a new manager. So we might be able to spread that out a little bit.
Okay, cool.
Yeah.
We've had some challenges when we move people around. A lot of their previous responsibilities kind of go with them, and they have trouble saying no to something that they were once responsible for. You know, when I have ones and I kind of, one of my questions is like, how's your workload overall? When I hear that tension back of like, well, I'm still kind of doing all these other things that I used to do. The thing I tell people is to lower their tolerance. As owners, we feel very empowered that when we feel pain, we just want to solve it. We want to stop. I don't want to feel pain anymore. People, you know, from the employee position, sometimes you feel like you should take the pain And I tell them to like literally lower your tolerance. Don't take so much pain. At some point, if you're really frustrated, guess what? I don't want you to be frustrated. So just speak up before you're extremely frustrated.
It's interesting you brought that up. I wasn't planning on talking about this, but I just let somebody go on Audience Ops and they...
Always tough.
Well, they've been a manager for us for a long time, like over 2 years. And it was basically for that reason that you just said, that he would never say no. And he would actually get sort of, I don't know, angry and defensive when we try to take stuff off of his plate. And what happened was he took a full-time job alongside Audience Ops. And Audience Ops is all people who work remotely and they're basically mostly freelancers. A lot of them are stay-at-home parents and they sort of balance their week. They have that flexibility to give Audience Ops like some attention every single day, and they have some other clients too. But if you have a full-time position, and his was actually has become pretty demanding, so he's been slacking on things like getting back to clients and things like that, and we just can't have that. So I had to let him go. And just to your point that you just brought up, the very best people at Audience Ops have been honest and upfront about saying, hey, Brian, hey, Kat, just letting you know, I'm at my max right now. Don't assign me any more clients.
Right. Like it's got to be okay. You know, it does take some, if not coaching, then just explicitly letting everyone know, like, you're allowed to say that. Please say that. If we
tell them that, and we've had some, really most of the team has been on the team for several years now, and the best ones, we literally have notes on our board where we keep track of everybody's workload, and it says like max 12 articles a month or max 10 clients or whatever, and like, or currently at their max right now. Or a lot of times they'll be temporary. Like somebody will be like, I just got another big project for the next 2 months, just letting you know, like, can't take any more until October or whatever, you know?
Yeah. Early on, I made the assumption that everyone, you know, was more like me than not. And I'm like an aggressive New York Jew. Like, it makes sense that there's going to be some disparity between how forceful I am in my opinions and compared to other people, especially from like the, you know, owner relationship. Yeah, but it's necessary. The big thing on my side over the past few weeks was Black Friday, Cyber Monday, right? That's like the event of the year for online commerce. And so that is the single most stressful weekend of the entire year for us. You know, we kind of have a countdown to it. You know, in the summer, we're starting off. So we're 100 days away. We're 90 days away. It's on everyone's mind the whole time, and especially around our clients. And we do a code freeze. We kind of have gotten a lot better at it over the past 3 years. This year went great. It was great. Last year, we only had one major hiccup, and it was an API rate limit on Shopify's end. And then once they opened that up, everything went well again. This year, just smooth, man. We did $5 million in one day for the first time. So that was like great to see the system just kind of flex. You know, our servers were running at 10 to 20%. And so everything was nice and cool. We did well on the revenue side in terms of our merchants processing revenue. We broke 50 million for the month of November. That was the first time also breaking 50. So the numbers went well and we added a bunch of revenue because of it. But the thing I was most happy about and most like proud of was how calm the whole thing felt. Around Black Friday, a lot of people on Twitter, a lot of people in e-commerce are on Twitter and, you know, other software companies, and everyone's kind of, you know, jacked up. Everyone's excited. A lot of the tweets I saw showed people like eating pizza late at night with the team and like, you know, we're burning the midnight oil for our clients type of thing. And We just did nothing, man. It was just quiet. We shut down the office. Yep, just another day. And we just went right through it. We communicated properly ahead of time. But it felt calm, which is like a theme over the past 6 months.
It's nice for you to be this many years now into the Carthook business to know, like, this is a huge marker in the year. So when you're planning big projects coming out of, you know, late summer, fall, like, you know that Black Friday is coming up, and you can kind of plan around that.
Yeah, which features we want to have before it, which can be after, and it doesn't matter as much. And then the communication has gotten so much better with customers. We're producing content for them around Black Friday, and then we're communicating properly around releases and code freezes. It felt like much more orderly than previous years. So that went well.
That's great.
How about you? You want to update us on ProcessKit, what you were alluding to earlier?
Yeah, so ProcessKit is now definitely my focus right now. One thing that I did, I don't think I talked about this since our last episode, is so I made this change about a week ago now, where I sort of shut down the self sign up. I talked about how, like, when I launched the new website about 2 months ago, people can just come to the website and sign up for a trial. So my goal was like, look, in December, I need to talk to more customers and just get a really good understanding of what are the blockers from converting from trial to paid. So now, like, when they go to the homepage, they click the button, it says request a trial. That goes to a page that says, hey, let's book a call. I think it says, like, let's talk about workflows, or, and then a little bit of copy that's, and then a button to get on my Calendly. From the Calendly booking, it directs straight to the trial so that they can start the trial immediately, and that by the time we get on a call, they will have started the trial, and I can sort of look at their actual account and that sort of thing. I did add in a small link. So there's like a big button that says book the call, and then a small link that says skip and go straight to trial. I have noticed that a bunch of people do skip it and they go straight to the trial. But, you know, overall, in general, I mean, December is definitely slower right now for ProcessKit. Like, November was big, added a bunch of paying customers, had a whole bunch of trials come in, partly from Product Hunt, partly from the email list, because I had announced some new features in early November. So that brought some activity. But then, you know, Thanksgiving, Black Friday came around, and now we're like midway through December, and I haven't really had a good reason to come back to the email list again. So everything's been just really quiet on ProcessKit. Still getting some trials, but like just not nearly the number that we've had before, which means the conversions are much lower right now as well. So people are checked out. I mean, I am now starting work on probably the number one, the biggest remaining feature request that I hear is being able to share stuff with guests. So I've got some clients, or I've got some temporary freelancers. I want to share a task with them, or I want to share a list of tasks with them, but I don't want to invite them as full users in my ProcessKit account. So guest users I'm like halfway through building it right now. And that'll be a big announcement when I get it out, hopefully sometime in December. And I do have some calls with customers on the calendar. Not as much as I would like, frankly. I would like to have more, but it's some book the call through the trial sign up, like I said, and then some, once they're already in a trial, at the end of the trial, I have an email that says, hey, do you want an extension? And a few people take me up on that, and they reply, say, yeah, I do want some more time. And when they do, I say, great, here's your extension, and here's my call link. Like, let's have a call and talk about it. And a few people take me up on that. Not everyone, you know, it's a SaaS product. I mean, not everybody wants to talk, you know?
Yeah, a lot of people, yeah. Yeah, we forget that because we force everyone to talk, but not everyone wants to.
It's got some paying customers. It has had good reception generally throughout the year, but it's not hitting product market fit yet. You know, it's definitely got that. It's not only that it's a long, slow ramp, it's also like I need to get really clear on what are the actual objections or the actual blockers from somebody starting a trial to deciding like, yep, time to put the credit card in, time to get my team committed to this.
Do you think about product market fit as like the goal? Like you want to see it kind of click and take off? Like how do you think about that?
I mean, I don't think there's going to be a point where it's like, yep, today's the day, we've got the product market fit, it's done, good. Like that's not going to happen. It's definitely
you just go closer and closer to...
Closer and closer. It's like, you know, we'll inch a percentage point closer to it. For me right now, my experience is like, look, I do a lot of customer calls or user calls or early access people calls. And I ask a lot of, I think, good questions. I do start to hear trends in their answers. Like a number of people have asked about this guest access thing. A number of people have just talked about different patterns, but I don't know. I feel like I don't have hard data to say like, yep, 80% of people say the reason that they're not converting is because of the price point or because it doesn't have this feature, or like I don't have any definitive answer. I just have like gut feel.
I think gut feel matters more than data at this point, but that's a debate I'm happy to have anytime. It makes prioritizing difficult, though.
It does. It does. I mean, there's right now I could probably point to maybe three or four significant features that I know I'm going to build. It's just sort of a question of the order. And I think guests is probably the most important one, and I've already started that one.
So that's like user management, so people can invite people into individual processes?
Yeah, because a lot of people say like, okay, it's the pricing is like per user, but I have a lot of people that I don't consider to be full teammates, and I don't want to pay for them. Or they're like, they're clients and I only want them to see a certain thing. I don't want them to be
right. Permissions. Yeah, it's tricky. Back when we started, I would see that and I would just start making deals. And then that became such a pain, right? I would just say, okay, well, what do you need? What can you pay? What this, what for the price, bang. And then, a lot of people run weird custom plans. And then at some point in the future, we had to just go back and clean all of that up and say, sorry, we're just going to do it this way from now on.
I think pricing is still, it's so hard because it's, I just don't think that people give you an honest answer when you ask them about pricing. And also like people sort of pay for things like sometimes irrationally or don't pay for things irrationally. Like, so every call that I have, I always bring up the subject of pricing. Like what, give me your thoughts on the price point on how it's structured, the minimum and the per user. And like, is this something like in line that you see yourself paying for? And I also ask them about like the tools that you're currently paying for. How much are you paying for those? Which ones are you paying for? I do ask all those questions. And more times than not, they tell me, yeah, I don't really have a problem with the process kit price point. But I have seen a few emails like come in email form saying like, yeah, it's definitely more expensive than the competition. And that gives me pause or something like that. Or
it's tough to tell if you should do anything about that or not.
Yeah. Then it's a question of like, all right, well, who is the perfect customer? Like maybe that person is not the perfect customer. Like, and there are people right now paying for it. And there are people who are paying that they've expanded. They have more users that they're paying for now. So like, I don't know. It's like you're roaming around in a fog trying to figure out which direction you should be going, you know?
Yeah. And you kind of have to be, you know, okay with the fact that you'll be in the fog for a while. It's not going to get that clear that soon. On my side of things with Cardhook, the big thing on our minds is just 2020 planning for offense. The way we look at it, the life trajectory of this product was coming up with it in 2017 and building and getting out there. And it was not good enough. Then 2018, we relaunched it. It got good enough for people to actually use and succeed with. And so 2018 was this big growth year. We tripled revenue and it was fun, but we had work to do. Like it wasn't healthy, right? We were churning out way too much. So we were growing more than we were churning, but you knew that something on the horizon was not going to work out. We had to get better. So 2019 turned into that year of, okay, well, let's get healthy. Let's get the churn down. Let's get the process better. That's what the pricing change was, the application and demos. In the past 6 months, we're just focused on that. Now we had a successful Black Friday. Good. But 2020, that's got to be growth again. And so right, I'm getting everyone in the company just in this mindset of 2020 is where we're going. We're going to spend more on advertising. We're going to spend more on marketing. We're going to push harder. We're going to hire people on that side of the business and not as much on engineering product. And as we're doing that, we're trying to come up with what the right mix, right? We have inbound. SEO has gotten a lot better because we're generating content now.
Can you give us like just an update on like what does like the state of marketing right now look like with Cardhook here in December 2019? Like what have you been doing? What's the stack?
Sure. So back in June, we had a different set of metrics. And so, you know, we were looking at traffic and trials. So we were getting like 400 free trials a month, and that was our metric. We want more trials. When we made the switch, the metric changed that our goal of what we wanted to maximize, that right now we wanted qualified leads, which is very different from trials. And so that changed the marketing a lot. And then we hired Lucy as our director of communications, and she and Ed, who was the only person on the marketing team, now both make up the marketing team. And so along with that, they also got some budget to work with additional people, like for writing and things like that. And so it took them a few months to kind of get their legs, and now they're producing.
One question. So sure. You put those two people on marketing and communications. Do you just say like, okay, X number of dollars per month, that's your budget to go play with? Hire writers, spend on advertising, do whatever you're going to do.
I would say that I did not do a very good job of that. I discounted that budgeting, and here is your specific budget, and it's your choice how you spend it. I discounted how important that was, and that was a mistake. And so we have been looking at it as, well, you know, we spend X amount on advertising every week, so that's, you know, that's the normal budget, and Jordan's fine with that, and so let's keep doing that. You know, going back to ask people to more explicitly say when they're frustrated, if there's anything that's more difficult, it's spending the company's money. Right? Voicing your frustration is one thing. Spending the company's money is a different thing also. Now we're getting into budgeting, where I really should have done that a few months ago. So over the past few months, they've kind of looked at it and have been a little bit hesitant and, oh, we want to use, you know, SEO Moz. Can we sign up for that? And it's like, that's $200 a month. Like, you don't even have to ask me for that. Yes, but I didn't explicitly say so. And so that's my fault. So now that's getting better. And this is part of the same conversation that we're talking about now in terms of 2020 budgeting is part of that. So they are now producing significantly more content. They're running by a calendar. And what it really looks like is Lucy is responsible for that content being generated. Doesn't mean that she's writing everything, but whether it's working with Kristen LaFrance from Churnbuster on a post we just launched last week, or working with a case study buddy or something internal, or having one of our employees write about their story and how they got into tech, we're just creating a lot more content and she's responsible for it. And then Ed is really amplifying that, making sure it gets onto the blog, into the email list, onto the ads, into the retargeting, into the exit intent pop-up. So they're like, they're a good duo right now.
That's great. That's just like really cool to hear, because it's like you've got it running on all cylinders. And I think about all the, I mean, not that I would do all of that for Process Kit today, that you're on a much more advanced stage of this marketing process, but like they're all things like that. Like a lot of it is content related, that even though I have the team at Audience Ops that I could work with, like it's still a lot that just requires me in terms of strategy right now. And that's, I've been thinking a lot about that, and I'm coding on the product. So it's like, I can only give it so many brain cells a week. And it's, that's the bootstrapper's dilemma, is like, you know, what can you do?
That's right. Yeah, you need that to grow, but you can't spend money on it yet. And so what do you kind of do? Right. Yep. So I hear you. And I used to myself as like the marketer.
Or even if I can spend money, like I have a budget ready to go. It's just that I don't want to say like, hey, all right, take all this money and go, you think about it. Like it's at such an early stage that I need to be thinking about what the strategy is. Yeah.
Yes. And it's changed for us now. They are more qualified than I am on how to spend that budget and in what way. I think I'm still in a good position to come up with the creative ideas, because they're busy running the machine. So I can come in and say, look, I don't think, you know, standard content breaks through these days. What if we did teardowns of people's funnels, right? And so we're looking into that type of thing. So that's like an idea that I can bring from the outside. But yeah, I'm much more manager now than I am marketer, and that's for the better.
Well, what are you thinking about changing for 2020?
So here's the thing, right? If you think about this mix, right? So we have content, and that generates activity and social, and now SEO. SEO has popped up a much more significant channel than it used to be. I'm one of these people that doesn't know enough about SEO, so he dismisses it, and that's wrong. Especially early on, I was like, we're not going to invest in SEO. We're trying to be alive in a year, let alone get results a year from today.
Dude, I talked about it a couple of weeks ago. It is getting slept on as this like, oh, SEO is dead these days, or SEO is not as relevant as it used to be. It is relevant. And
maybe because it's difficult.
You know what? It's difficult, but it's also easier, I think. It's I think there's more low-hanging fruit.
Gaming.
There's just more low-hanging fruit now with SEO. You can get angry at the Googles of the world all you want, but I think Google is better now. And I have no hard data or insights to back this up. It just seems to me that Google is better at surfacing things that you're searching for. That it's the algorithms are smarter. So you don't need thousands upon thousands of paid backlinks to get a page to rank. If it is relevant and you're not in an extremely competitive, you know, keyword space, like if you just put in good content, well-structured page, like it can rank. I mean, on ProcessKit is a brand new domain, you know, and I just launched a couple weeks back those sets of process templates that I talked about. And I've got a long content page for each one. I am seeing already organic traffic from Google. I think I talked about on the previous episode that random guy who came in and requested a demo, and I felt like, oh, that it didn't really, I wasn't really prepared for giving a legit demo. Like I'm still talking to early access people, and you know, he found it from Google, and I mean, he ended up converting, and it was an expanded account with more users. And it's like, I literally just launched these pages like 2 weeks prior. It's not like SEO and content necessarily will work overnight, but sometimes it's just one or two people can find it in a Google search, and that can happen within 2 weeks, you know?
Yeah. Yeah. So that's starting to contribute. We have one article in particular, to even say what it is, because it's turning into a source of traffic, bringing in like 10% of our trials. One page that we launched 3 months ago about one specific topic, and then we noticed it, and now we're bulking up that page and making it better, making it a resource, and we have a downloadable thing there. It's like, all right, so now we have our ads, and there's a really big project underway now to redo our marketing site. And really, it's not about redoing the marketing site, it's about redoing our positioning. So our site is the same as it was, you know, 12 or 18 months ago. And that was for a different audience and a different process and the free trial thing. And it feels like the internal sales process is now well ahead of the external site. And so we're trying to get there. We're trying to talk about what our new set of customers are talking about. And that's less direct. Like right now, we don't want to sell make more money. That's not actually what we want to sell. We want to sell better relationships with your buyers, and that will result in you making more money. So it's like one level added on top of that, right? So we're not talking about average order value. We're talking about customer relationships that lead to higher average order value.
I think that's another common sort of pitfall that a lot of us in this world fall into, where it's like we're constantly making changes in how our sales funnel works and how our product has evolved and things. But our marketing websites change, what, once every 2 years, 3 years? Like maybe yeah, we'll do a quick update here and there. I mean, Brennan Dunn with Right Message just launched like probably version 6 of the Right Message website. And I think he does a really fantastic job of this, where it's like, yeah, they probably worked really hard on the version from earlier in the year, but 4 months later, things changed in the product, and he went and got the whole thing redesigned and relaunched. And it looks great, but you could see like the strategy has changed. So, you know, take that from the front to the back of the funnel.
That's what it takes. It takes, okay, if you learn something, then change something externally. We're doing that. And then along with that, all of our advertising will change along with that positioning and the new design. And so that's kind of underway. But in my head, I want more proactive offense. Like 2019... we all focused inward on improving things, that we did very little outbound marketing of any type other than advertising and content. And so now we have confidence in the product that we didn't used to in quite the same way. And so now the thing that's glaringly missing in our mix is the ability to identify, hey, this site right here, Marine Layer, they're on Shopify. They're awesome. We're awesome. Let's go tell them about us and see if maybe we want to work together. Right now, we don't have anything like that proactively looks at something and says, that is a good prospect. Let's go talk to them. So what we're trying to figure out is, what is that?
Yeah, I was just going to ask, like, I don't think it's just pure cold email outreach anymore. It's It's got to be more than that.
That's right. It's got to, it's like network.
Yeah.
It's biz dev as sales.
It's like somebody full time on like, which conference is that person going to be? Let me go there and meet them. You know?
Yeah. You kind of need to be a magician. You almost need to be like a founder. Like, I don't know how I'm going to get in touch with them, but in the next week, I'm going to find a way in and just find a way in. So we're thinking through what that means, because whenever you say the word sales, people have all these assumptions attached to it. And so whenever I say sales, I caveat constantly. I'm like, well, not traditional sales, not like making 50 calls a day sales, not outbound cold email sales, not what you think of as sales, our version of sales. We're going to come up with what sales looks like for us. We're trying to think what that means, right? There are traditional elements of it. You need data, you need research, you need to find who the prospects are, then you need to qualify them. So it is a boring process in many ways, but what comes out of it should be our own unique on how we want to do it.
Yeah. I mean, I was just talking to, Sarah, who's going to be taking over sales for Audience Ops right now. And I think we're going to be looking for a little bit more of an emphasis on, like, we have really good retention right now with our customers, but I think we could do more to get them talking and referring more better customers who are just like them, just to have somebody kind of dedicated to driving more referrals, you know, and I haven't really done a good job of that. So I think that could be a good place to go.
You want the most efficient channels in some ways. A channel that just takes a lot of work might be a really good channel. So it's not just about efficient. Maybe just doing the hard work of, you know, some form of sales will work for us. So that's what we're doing. You know, we're.
But the it's also interesting because I've been thinking a lot about marketing for Process Kit, because it's, so I'm at that point now where there's still plenty of people on the list, the email list, like the early access list, who obviously have not converted, like the vast majority of them. So I could still go back to them with some updates and things. But now the website is out. I've already been on Product Hunt. Now I am sort of making that turn into 2020. Like, all right, I need to drive traffic. I need to grow. I need to have some strategy to drive the right types of people to start trials that I can then convert. And part of that is positioning, like you were just talking about. I mean, one of the thoughts that I have now, and this is just going to require some work, not so much on the product, but more on the marketing side of things. Like one thought that I had is to have these niche pages or use cases for Process Kit and turn those into mini products in themselves. I'm calling them products, but really it's just going to be Process Kit. So like one example is customer onboarding. That's probably the most common use case for Process Kit right now. So especially if you're doing any sort of like concierge onboarding of getting a new customer set up and onboarded into a monthly retainer or into a SaaS, but it requires some handholding during the first couple of weeks, just like we do in Audience Ops. But I've seen a couple of SaaS companies pay for Process Kit to do their concierge onboarding, kind of come to market with call it like a product. Like it's the customer onboarder product powered by Process Kit or something like that.
I don't know if that's necessary. Usually in enterprise software, where they'll have, right, the homepage, and then they'll have something maybe called features or platform, and it goes through features, and then they'll have a tab called solutions, and it'll say for e-commerce, for SaaS, for enterprise, for healthcare, and then that page will be dedicated for if you're in healthcare, this is how healthcare uses our product. These are our features talked about in a way that makes sense to a healthcare.
Yeah, company. I mean, I guess I'm sort of talking about that same thing. Like it'll still live on the Process Kit website and everything, but a little bit more focused on the job to be done framework, you know? Because I think right now, if you look at the homepage, it's a lot about, okay, your projects need to be powered by processes and we're bringing those things together. That's how we're different from a typical project management tool. Okay, great. And I think that's still fine for the homepage message. But I think part of the challenge when people are trialing and getting them to convert is like, all right, well, what should I do in Process Kit? Like, what am I here for? What is this effort going to be aimed at? And I think if I can have one funnel that's sort of aimed at customer onboarding, like if I can catch people who have already made the decision in their mind, like it's time for us to dial in our customer onboarding process. Oh, this is the solution for that. It's made for that. like another really common one is basically a sales, kind of like a CRM. I mean, I'm using this now. I'm using Process Kit now for the audience ops sales CRM. And it's really cool because you could tie in Zapier and have like when they've booked the call in Calendly, you can move them along in the process automatically. Over. And
very cool.
And I'm having my salesperson like tracking her progress on leads through Process Kit and all that. So that could be another solution page or positioned page. Like if you are optimizing a consultation to call to sale process, like here's Process Kit solution for that. And I was thinking about like having that combined with like a little mini video course for each one, like a free, like here's step by step. Here's how you should set up your onboarding process. Like take the course. It's going to show you step by step how to do it. And of course it's going to show you how to do it in Process Kit and like, you know, and have these like as like little mini sections of the site.
I could see that being very effective if your prospects are looking for a solution to a specific process and you nail on the site what they're looking for. Because right now your site does a good job of talking about what your product can do, but it asks the reader to make the leap between what the site is telling them is possible and how they are going to apply it to their specific problem.
Yeah. I mean, my belief is that you could use Process Kit to run a bunch of different aspects of your operation. You know, you could have it run your onboarding, you could have it run your blog content production, you could have it run your podcast or your bookkeeping or all these different repeatable things. But in terms of marketing and getting them in, if I can catch them on just do one job, just commit to having Process Kit handle your onboarding and get them sold on that, then over time they could expand it into their other departments, you know?
Yep. I agree. I want to see it. It looks great.
Yeah. I'll have that all done by tomorrow probably. So yeah, it'll be easy.
Oh yeah. Well, knowing you, you probably will. So that's it, man. I feel like I've been carrying this hangover like a 25-pound dumbbell. There's only so long I could keep it up, Brian. At some point, I got. How about you? Are you heading out for the holidays? I'm going to Florida, West Coast of Florida.
Nice.
Getting
nice.
The sun.
No, nothing in December. We might do a quick trip up to one of these mountains and get some early snowboarding and ski lessons for my kids going. But I'm really psyched for January, February. I've got three back-to-back trips. We got Big Snow Tiny Comp Vermont, then Big Snow Tiny Comp Colorado, and then the week after that, my wife and I are going to the Galapagos Islands for a week.
Oh.
So hey now. Yeah, that's going to be a fun little trip, or like a string of trips.
That sounds awesome.
That's I've great. got about 5 or 6 weeks between now and that whole lineup of trips. So I'm going to try to ship a lot of stuff between now and then.
Nice, man. Yeah. And MicroConf in April.
Yeah.
In
yeah. We just saw all the exciting announcements. I'm excited for everything. They like the, they're going to do, you know, the local ones in Boston and Austin. I mean, that's pretty cool.
And Portland, I believe also, right?
Portland,
Denver.
Yeah.
Well, no, Denver is Portland's one of the local ones. That'll be fun. It's almost like, you know, our MicroConf group is almost going to like feel like hosts, you know, that'll be fun. And then Denver is the actual growth conference next year.
Yeah.
Yep.
Cool. I mean, I'm just excited to like travel to most. I'm going to try to get to as many of these as I can. Like it's an excuse to go to Asia in 2021. So,
right. Absolutely. Cool, man. There's more news, I guess, that we could have talked about, but I got a boogie pretty soon. Any of them you want to bring up before we call it? Right. The
Barometrics
post was super interesting. Thank you to Josh for being very transparent about that. That's one of those.
Yeah. I like how he did it as like a podcast. Or if he wrote about it, but then he releases it as a podcast. That was pretty good.
Yeah, I think he's been doing that for most posts these days. I don't think it's just the post, isn't it?
Yeah, I guess he has. Yeah.
Yeah, it's just another way to consume it. That's one side of business you don't really hear about very often.
Yeah, just another shout out to the DHH thing that we talked about this on the last episode, I think, about the one password article. Well, after that, he had Dave Thierry, however you say his name, from 1Password come on the Rework podcast. And so DHH and him sort of, it was a really good conversation that they had. I enjoyed listening to that one. I'm still tuning into the Bootstrapper podcast, man. Out of Beta, Matt Wensig, and
Peter?
Peter. I know people's faces, and I always forget.
Yes, their Twitter handles.
Yeah, I know them by their Twitter handles, basically. That's always a good one.
Yeah, I worked with Matt a little bit on his product for us for a little while, and Peter's cool, and I see them in the Tiny Seed Slack. Like, they're getting after it. They're getting after it, and they're going about it the right way. You know, Matt has some experience. He has a previous company that he sold and is now kind of taking a lot of the lessons from that and applying it to this one and how he's building it. So it's very cool to see.
Yeah, yeah. I've been enjoying sort of like tuning into those sorts of podcasts, and then Art of Product and all the usual ones.
Oh, yes.
Good stuff.
All right, man. Good to talk with you. Thanks, everybody, for listening. Brian, have a great weekend.
All right, buddy. You too.
See ya. See ya.